Britt Smith has recently been elected as an MP in Ireland, in Dublin. So,
we formed a coalition and we're very successful to get a block of six socialists in the Dáil, so it's really exciting times indeed. And then that was followed by a wonderful victory in Belfast on a young man called Jerry McCarroll, who got twice the amount of votes as Sinn Féin, topped the poll in Gerry Adams' hometown in West Belfast, and the notorious and incredible Eamon McCann. So we come in here. And how we got there, and to try and explain the politics and the material conditions behind what's led to this extraordinary situation. So, I mean, I'm very inspired by what the last speaker talked about, but really I want to follow that up by talking about struggle. Not necessarily strikes, we've had a low level of industrial struggle and strikes in Ireland, both north and south of the border, with a very high level of struggle, mainly against the water charges. Now, I want to argue that it wasn't just the water charges that people were inspired to fight against, but actually it was against something that you guys are going to vote on next month, against the disgraceful behaviour of the EU, who are really financial terrorists at this stage right across Europe, particularly in terms of the countries that have suffered the hardest. They call them a derogatory name, the pigs, Portugal, Ireland, Greece and Spain. And these are the four countries that have been bailed out by the Troika. I'm assuming you don't know all this, so I'm going to patiently try and explain the bits and pieces. The Troika is made up of a combination of the IMF, which are a vicious force of capitalism that have operated mainly in the southern part of the globe, in Asia and South America and South Africa and places across the African continent, where they move in to loan money to economies which are in trouble and then practically rape them of everything they own, destroy workers' conditions, destroy the natural resources and privatise every service that moves. The IMF are now doing this in the heart of Europe, in Greece, Portugal, Ireland and Spain. When they came to Ireland in 2010, on the back of the financial collapse, so everybody knows about the private money and the disgraceful speculative lending that's taking place right across Europe, Ireland, I think, the banks in Ireland borrowed twice the size of the national economy from the biggest banks of Europe, from France, Germany, Britain, and other banks. So twice the size of the national economy was borrowed, mainly to gamble on the stock exchange or to gamble in financial and transactions by big banks in Ireland. But it was Joe Soaps and Josephine Soaps that actually bailed them out, and that's how suffered the terrible social consequences as a result. So when this strike evaded with the IMF, the EU and the ECB, the European Central Bank, moved into Ireland in 2010, they really came in with a message, and the message was, we are going to make you guys pay for what they call partying. Most of us didn't party, but there is no doubt that during the Celtic Tiger, there was a huge increase in the wealth of the 1%, the very top of Irish society. But not for most people. Actually, when you look at the stats and the graphs on it, for most ordinary people, workloads increased, wages were kept at an even key by a system they call social partnership, where the government negotiated the wage increases on behalf of the rest of us, but the productivity of Irish workers went through the roof during this period. So when they moved in, they basically started to, as I described it, rape the country. The three things they insisted on was absolute social, fundamental social change in terms of the delivery of services, whether they be public services delivered by the local authorities, water, health, education, transport, the absolute regular funding of the services. The second thing was to drag down the conditions and pay of workers and to bring them down as far as they possibly could. I'm sure you've all heard the expression, never waste a good crisis, and that was the attitude they took to it, not waste a crisis. And thirdly, the last thing they did was to what was really measures that would open the state's resources for privatisation, altogether privatisation. And really how that manifested itself was in the form of an €85 billion bailout, the biggest bailout in financial history ever in the world. And that was lumped onto the lap of the Irish people. And that was lumped onto our lap at the same time that the banks that were being paid back through Europe, the ones I mentioned, I have the names that are written down here, if I can find it. BNP Paribas, Aviva, Axis Paris, the Joint Investment Bank, and crucially Goldman Sachs. These banks that were being paid back were, of course, increasing their profits on the backs of things like, really horrendous things like cuts to disability payments. People who were disabled in wheelchairs, not able to work in normal jobs, had their payments slashed by their support. Lone parents, when you look at the stats, the children of lone parents make up the highest rate of poverty among children. 1 in 5 children in Ireland now live in absolute poverty. And lone parents make up the highest rate of that. 22% of children with lone parents are in poverty, while in the rest of the population, the children of couples, it's about 8 to 9%. There should be no children in poverty, but these are the stats that show that lone parents have their allowances slashed, had their working hours slashed, and had things like benefits for housing allowance and their children's education slashed out of it. The travel community, a very small community by comparison to the rest of the population, about 30,000 to 40,000 people. I work closely with the travel community in the area that I'm elected to represent, and the conditions of travellers are absolutely appalling. Just one example is the suicide rate among traveller men is 7 times that of the rest of the population. Mental health is a huge issue. Children, mortality rates of children is very, very high compared to the rest of the population, and the lifespan of both men and women is much lower than the rest of the population. There are special budgets to assist travellers to get educated. They cut the traveller education budget by 86%. They may as well told the travellers to fuck off and die. They really went after them. They cut their accommodation budget by 80%. And this is what the financial minister described, callously described, as picking the low-hanging fruit. That was the term he used. And they did indeed pick the low-hanging fruit. They also went after old-age pensioners. They went after all of the sort of most vulnerable, most marginalised people in society. And then, of course, they cut the health budget, they cut the education budget, the third-level education budget, the primary school budget, the back-to-school allowance, everything was cut. They moved to privatise the buses, which there's a big red one on there. If I get a chance to talk about it, I will. Because I think we're on the cusp of winning a very important transport strike in Dublin from the texts I'm getting today. They moved to privatise the distribution of services in social welfare. So things like services for drug addicts and people with alcohol issues, addiction issues in the community, wholesale privatisation of these services. They moved them to privatise after-school clubs for kids. Everything being privatised. But it was when, and it was only when, they went after water that people said enough is enough. It was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I think that when you look back and analyse what happened over the last 4 years in terms of water and movement that was built around it, it was because for the first time, people felt, I can do something about this. I can get out in the street and I can sit over, and this is literally what used to happen. All the animals would get out with their plastic chairs and everything, and they'd sit over in space where the Irish Water contractors were trying to install heaters, and they'd refuse to move. And they'd have a cup of tea, and they'd have a big party on the street, and they'd stay there day and night. And it kind of ignited a community spirit that we'd never seen before. 6:30 in the morning, they get up, they control the estates to make sure we're sending fast, not getting in here, and they'd be sitting over and sitting on and lying down on and parking their cars and their motorbikes over the spaces where the meters were supposed to be installed. They missed a lot because the police came in very heavy. There was often riots in the estates. Quite a lot of people went to prison. And there are children now being sentenced over protests in local states. And when I say that, I mean individuals under the age of 17. There were women put in prison for protests, and the thing just mushroomed and mushroomed. But crucially, in the centre of that, People Before Profit, the organisation I represent, we won TD then, that was Richard Boy Barrett, And Richard took an initiative to bring together all of the unions, that the more progressive elements of the unions, like Unite and Mandate. Unite here is the same Unite as we have here. Mandate is the equivalent of Ulster, represents shareholders, and is quite a progressive union in Ireland. Sinn Féin, which in the south of Ireland are seen as progressive. I'll talk a bit about the north where they're seen as the opposite. Some elements of the left, you know, ourselves and the Soldiers Party, etc., etc. Richard took the initiative. We all sat down together and decided to hold a conference. We called it the Right to Water, like the Right to Water campaign in Europe. And within that, we would then mobilise as far and as wide as we could. And I think that United Front really took the imagination of those in the communities who were identified in the meeting. And then there were scandals, like the metering contract was being awarded to a geezer called Dennis O'Brien, who actually lives in the Bahamas. Mostly is out of court deals on telecommunications and water contracts in Ireland, but doesn't pay any tax in Ireland. So that fueled people's anger, and also politicised and made the connections, like you talked about the system earlier on, the overall capitalist system, how it looks after the tiny elite at the expense of the vast majority. And these connections were being made, and we show films about the privatisation of water in Europe and the fight against it. We had one of the fighters from Cochabamba over from Bolivia, Marcela Oliveira. She was very inspiring, and she brought movies and all over. And thousands of people became political about the issue of water. And water was seen as a human right, not something that you can modify and pay for and meter and count as it comes to your table. And anybody who knows Ireland knows we have it in abundance. And we have so much water that you could cry. You don't get a summer. But the real problem with the water infrastructure in Ireland is not the fact that people aren't or weren't paying for it. It's the fact that we pay for it through many different taxation systems. And since the Victorian era, they have never bothered investing in looking after the infrastructure. So would you believe more than 48% of clean treated water leaks back into the ground? That's a national figure because of the lack of investment in the infrastructure. Even through the years of the Celtic Tiger, when they were cream of it, and the Minister for Finance would boast about 20 billion in excess in the coffers, they did not bother to try and fix the leaks underground in cities like Dublin, Cork, Limerick, etc., where the most leakages have been taking place. So the argument that people were making is invest to general and progressive taxation, make that bastard Dennis O'Brien and the rest of them pay their taxes here, and invest through general taxation in fixing the creeping infrastructure so that we can have what is a human right and be able to turn on our taps and use our best natural resource. It really is the best natural resource we have to our advantage. And then coming up the back of that is TTIPs, the arrangement that Europe are having with America to be able to sue countries like Ireland if they refuse, for example, to privatise their water, or refuse, even worse, to allow fracking companies from Canada and the US in to destroy our countryside. And 2 days ago, the first fracking took place in Antrim, in Belfast, and unfortunately, Sinn Féin, who are now running with the DUP and have been for quite a while, didn't even squeak or open their mouths about it. Now, that has all been a political experience for everybody, both north and south of the border. And simultaneously, north of the border, the Tory government have forced massive cuts in the public sector. What they call a fresh start, 20,000 public sector jobs to go, massive cuts in education, health, mental health, basic services, very high rate of suicide in Northern Ireland, and they're closing down mental health services. And our groups in Belfast and Derry, just as we did in Cork and Galway and Dublin and every community, related to those campaigns by mobilising people, putting on pickets, working and fighting alongside workers to protect services. And this has led to a huge popularity for people before in the north, because Sinn Féin are implementing austerity in the north by the way they caused it in the south. Now, we work with them in the south, obviously, because they're a big party, they have lots of votes, but we also need to fight out those contradictions. So we've had, I'd say, probably the guts of 20% of the population marching against the water charges and for the abolition of Irish water. The outcome has been in the last general election that over 90 of us who ran in the election as part of that movement, as part of the Right to Water campaign, not just talk about water but about the austerity that the EU butchers have imposed on us in general, and crucially for people for profit to repudiate the debt. We pay $9 billion a year back in interest alone to that toxic debt to the European banks. And one of our crucial arguments was repudiate the debt and use that money to resource education, health, and to fix up the water infrastructure. And that won us a huge amount of support, and we got 6 people elected. And in Nigeria and the North. So now we have a huge challenge. We've got this North-South fighting against austerity together for the first time, a massive breakthrough. And we, most of us are, well, all of us in fact, when we're elected, are either members of the Socialist Party or the Socialist Local Party. Most of us are in the SWP as well. And the people who for profit as a party is a vehicle, if you like, that has concrete demands for reforms that we put on the system, but at the same time understand that the system is not capable of delivering them, particularly the one I mentioned that we're going to be able to. We win underwater, we haven't won yet. There's going to be a big demonstration next Wednesday. We have our joint motion, which should have been down before the Dáil Éireann report. So it's all a good year. The government and coming over here and investment. I'm going to Greece now tomorrow. So this big demonstration on Wednesday, and we're going to win on the water. I'm absolutely sure we put it to bed in the next couple of weeks. But we have to fight for housing, and we have to fight for health. There's a trolley crisis in Ireland. You wouldn't believe the hours and hours and hours that sick people spend on trolleys, days on trolleys, queuing up for services. And we have the biggest homeless crisis now in the history of the state, and we've never had as many empty homes. Every day there are more families living in hostels, hotels and homeless accommodation. And I mean families, I mean children who have to get up in Coolock or go to school in Ballyfermot, 2 or 3 bus journeys across the city, because the only hotel accommodation they can get is across the city. And that's happening all over the place. So we've big fights on our hands, but we have to be also aware that we win some of them, but we have to bring the population with us. And in doing that, my last message to all you guys in the hall is, in doing that, we have to make the population understand, or at least the fighting elements of the population, that we're fighting the manifestations of a rotten system, like Sally spoke about earlier on. This is how it manifests itself. This is how it comes after the 99% at the behest of the 1%. This is how it destroys the social fabric and how it takes lives, literally. People are committing suicide under the pressure of austerity. And we're fighting the manifestations of that, but we also have to fight the actual system itself. And we have to start thinking about, through the confidence and the politicisation we're gaining from this movement, what kind of a different world could we have? Could we control the sort of jobs we work in, the priorities that we have? Could we really put people before profit and decide to control our economy in a sensible, planned, even-handed way, and give people the sort of lives they deserve, where everybody can have access to water, food, health, education, a home, all of the basics, and then begin to enjoy the other aspects of life, to do with art and education and your brain and your abilities and your talent? Could we really do that? And I think more and more people, because they're engaged in struggle and their eyes are being opened and their experiences teaching them that this system is really rotten, more and more people are looking for a socialist alternative. And we're at that point in the world when we see what's happening with Sanders in America, and even Corbyn's election here, and the big changes with Syriza and the strikes in France, and the opportunities that exist right across the board to really challenge the system. It's time for us to make up our minds. Are we going to sit on the fence or fight for socialism? And I really do want to appeal to everybody in this hall to make the choice to get off the fence and fight for socialism. You're probably off it already, but if you're not, now's the time to do it.